The numbers told the story. They always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Good Friday morning to you. This is a numbers game at VSiN, the sports betting network, VSiN.com, the VSiN app, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV, all proudly brought to you by BetMGM. And I do mean proudly. It's Gil Alexander. It's Kelly Bidlin. How you doing, Kelly? What's happening?
Man, I'm doing well. How we doing? Game one NBA Finals, money in the pocket. Let's roll, baby.
Let's go. Never in doubt.
Never in doubt. No sweat at all, Gil.
Except for that it was unbelievably in doubt. Like, how could... we'll get into that momentarily. Nuggets take a 1-0 lead over the Heat by virtue of their 11-point win over the Miami Heat. A score that didn't really reflect how that game went, but man, oh man, if you were pre-flopping the side... That got scary at the end if you were a Nuggets backer. And by the way, the over went to die also as that game went on. Looked like it was going to soar over in the first half. Didn't get close. Didn't get close to the 219.5, 197, 104 to 93. The Nuggets beat the Heat game one. We'll talk about that here momentarily. JVT will talk about that with us, as always. Our senior NBA analyst and host of Hardwood Handicappers. Kelly, are you familiar with that podcast, Hardwood Handicappers?
Yes, I am. JVT and I will be talking about this much later later today, much more in depth.
We'll have him here in less than a half hour to discuss his thoughts on game one and then the series moving forward, which does not resume until Sunday. Again, it's the interminable NBA Finals. Game two Sunday, game three Wednesday. Thank God for hockey. Speaking of which, Jake Hahn will join us, co-host of The Point, the fantasy hockey show, to talk game one of the Stanley Cup Finals between the Vegas Golden Knights and the Florida Panthers, which is a fascinating contrast in the hot goaltender versus a team that just is filled with quality players but has goaltending questions from a full season standpoint anyway. Ben Wilson on the College World Series. There are those of us who, starting today, will be immersed in the college baseball postseason. It's not technically the World Series yet. It's the regional starting today. It's double elimination, 64 teams. Ben Wilson will be here to give his thoughts.
He's got bets. He sent me a bevy.
Do you have my list of like six futures this year?
Okay,
you
got them. We might have to circle on that. I think I got a few of those.
And then Danielle Alvari, hopefully in studio a little later on the show to talk WNBA with us. Just how good are the Aces? Should everybody be betting the Aces to win it all already?
That's all I want to talk to.
That's all I want to know.
Like, I don't think... Like, they're plus 115 still. I was putting that together this morning, and it's like the fifth time I've thought that since before the season started. Like, should we just not be betting this team? Like I understand Liberty are good, too, but this team is stacked.
Stacked. Did I talk about standing next to Candace Parker at the Aria on air? Or off air? I can't remember.
You told me off air, I think.
Goodness, she tall.
Mm-hmm.
She could totally dunk on me on the basketball court. She would have no problem posting me up. By the way, Dr. Bob is in town. Was hoping to have him in studio, but here was the word here's the quote. Here's the direct quote, Kelly, when I asked, hey, Bob, an offer he could absolutely refuse. Bob, you want to come down to the South Point at before 9 a.m.? He goes, Gil, I got to make sweet love to my wife. So he won't be here this morning, ladies and gentlemen, because Bob still can't feel his face when he's with her.
I was not expecting that quote.
There you go. That's what he said. I'm just being honest. We pull back the curtain here on the show. All right, NBA Finals game number one. Congratulations to those who had the Nuggets in game one, and even for those of us, again, as you know my thoughts on this, I was all over the Heat's magic carpet ride, and I believed that this was their kryptonite. I don't believe that they're going to get it done in any way, shape, or form in this series. Game one kind of reflected that. First of all, blue versus red jerseys. Can we start there? That was the first thing that leapt off the screen.
Yeah.
We're not doing white jerseys on one side anymore. The NBA was like, cool, we'll do blue and red.
I started to text you this when you texted me about it.
Yeah.
Like, and then the response became so long, I was like, this is just complete nonsense that I'm
That's
doing.
Right.
I'm like, I don't even know. But the point is, I don't know what the rules are anymore.
I don't either.
I'm guessing that the Nuggets didn't want to allow the Heat to wear white because that's become like a thing over the years with the Heat, white hot Heat. But like... why can't they wear white if the Nuggets choose to wear blue?
I don't know. Maybe the Heat wanted to wear that. I have no idea. Of course, the Nuggets version of white is like putting their white jerseys in the laundry and then some colors bled on it, and so it looks really bad. Anyways, blue versus red. And it is entirely possible that I'm 155 years old complaining about these things because there's something else I want to complain about later. But first quarter, Denver goes up 14-9. Aaron Gordon was the catalyst early. He had eight right out the chute, and then 14-9 lead. He was 4 of 6 from the field. He was posting up Caleb Martin. He was posting up Gabe Vincent at one point. The Heat were trying to get Jimmy Butler on him, but they kept getting switched up in transition. And every time Aaron Gordon spotted that, the whole Denver Nuggets team did, and they exploited it early. Nuggets led by 9 at the end of the quarter. That matched their biggest lead of the game thus far. Gordon finished the quarter with 12 on 6 of 8 shooting. Jokic had 6 assists and took his very first shot, at least his first shot in the box score. He was fouled on a previous attempt, but that's not an attempt at the box score. His first official shot came with 3.3 seconds left in the first quarter. And that was a big theme of game one. He dominated while not really asserting himself, at least from a shooting perspective. At that point, I then texted you after at the end of the first quarter. I texted Kelly, and again, 156 years old now, maybe I was even aging. I go, does your picture appear to be sharp? I'm not talking about the close-ups, but like the wide shot of the game, did it feel fuzzy to you? Like it felt like he needed a half to get that right also.
I don't know. Then you were in my head about that.
Yeah,
like,
thank you.
Living rent-free in my head. I'm like, Kelly's in the middle of his third cocktail, and I'm like, does look a little fuzzy. Yeah. Or wait, or does it? I don't know.
That's what I'm here for.
Gil, what are you texting me this for, man? I'm thinking about it.
20-6 in favor of the Nuggets in the paint at that point. Second quarter, Nuggets led by as many as 12. And this is the theme that I don't think we've quite emphasized as much. And we saw this against the Celtics, but the Heat have done this thing. Remember when I brought up Ray Leonard doing this to Marvin Hagler in 1987? He would steal the rounds with a flurry at the end of each round, and some judges were wowed by that, and he ended up winning the fight. The Heat have consistently done this thing at the beginning of quarters where they have a flurry, like a 7-0 here and a 6-0 there and a 7-2 there. Well, they started doing that last night, but here was the difference. So second quarter, Nuggets led by as many as 12. Then the Heat at one point, this isn't quite at the beginning of the quarter, but the Heat hit 7 buckets in a row and could only cut the lead to 6. And that was the beginning of what I feel is sort of the difference in this series. The Heat can have these amazing flurries, and it ultimately, pardon me, does not matter. Because the Nuggets got that back up from 6 to 17 by the half. Again, their biggest lead of the game to that point. Murray, 18. Jamal Murray was the leading scorer at halftime, 18 points on 8 of 12 shooting, 2 of 3 from behind the arc. Gordon had 14 on 7 of 9 shooting. Jokic at that point had 10, 3, and 10. Already had 10 assists. Bam, leading the scoring for Miami, was 16, 8 of 13. The Nuggets at that point were 25 of 42 from the field, 59.5%. 5 of 11 from behind the arc, 45.5%. Meanwhile, the Heat were 4 of 17 from behind the arc, 23.5%. And they were only 37.5% overall. So, I mean, that's all you needed to know. That's why the Nuggets were up 17. The third quarter, then, here's what the Heat did. They scored the first 7 points of the quarter. That's what they do to cut it to 10 right out of the gate. But the Nuggets bounced right back. This is the difference. The Eastern Conference teams could not absorb these Heat runs. The Nuggets bat them away like they're a gnat. G-N-A-T, Kelly. Silent G. Not a Washington National. They bounce right back up. Denver led by as many as 24. By the end of the quarter, it was 21. Now, keep in mind, the Heat got the last 3 points of that quarter. Then the Heat scored the first 11 points of the fourth quarter. So a 14-0 run to cut the lead to 10. And at that point, you're like, is the spread really going to be in play, let alone the game? There's over 10 minutes left in this thing. What the heck is happening? But the Nuggets took it right back to 16. And you're like, oh, there it is. There's the difference again. The Nuggets can absorb this and counterpunch. But the Heat got it, kept coming back in terms of the spread. Not really the game, but in terms of the spread. They kept coming back. They got it down to 10 a couple times. Then they got it to 9, which was where this number was for much of the run-up. With 2:30 left in the game, Denver ends up winning by 11. I didn't have the pre-flop play here. It was fun living this through guys like you and Will Hill, who were just sweating this tremendously on the Nuggets minus 9. Because Miami did have a chance to get it to 9 or 8 if they converted a 3 on the final possession. But Nikola Jokic, not to be confused with Nikola Jokic, turns the ball over. And Nuggets bettors can breathe a sigh of relief. They get the cover. Heat bettors for a moment there. That was one of those where, like, if you were a Heat bettor on the preflop, you were like, I probably didn't deserve to win that anyway. And you didn't in the end.
You texted me that you're like, oh, man, the 3. Because I had 8. Luckily, I had 8. So, like, I was in worst-case push territory.
A lot of people had 8.5, too. Yeah,
those last couple possessions. But you knew the other bet I was sweating the whole night. Michael Porter Jr. over 2.5 threes, makes his second 3 with 9 minutes remaining in the second quarter, and then lays enough bricks to build a house, I don't know, a whole district after that. So that last inbounds play, it's Michael Porter, quarter three. I'm like, cash them both. Hit this, baby. Nope. Let's walk out. Nope.
Nope.
Brick. Another brick.
You were like that last possession from Jovic. Like, you didn't even have to, like, your heart rate didn't have to go up. He just lost the ball, could have been even worse just from an anxiety standpoint. Jokic, Nikola Jokic, that is, ends up with a triple-double. By the way, that was a bad beat ready to happen, and he gets the rebound right at close to the end of that game, so he ends up 27-10-14. For anybody who has Jokic to get a triple-double in every game, that one just gets home when it looked like it was going to coast home.
Because I think it was early third quarter, Gil. I caught he was in double digits, points, assists, and was at seven rebounds.
Yes.
You're like, it's Nikola Jokic. He's going to grab three rebounds easily.
So he did get there as for the first of those, or maybe you had him having a triple-double last night, but for those who had him for every game in this series, there's the first leg of that. He entered the fourth quarter. This is the other big headline. He entered the fourth quarter with only five shots from the field.
Yep.
But was dominating the game, and when the Heat had that run to begin the fourth quarter, he kind of took over. He's like, look, I'm shooting now. He ends up the high scorer with 27. It's unbelievable. Murray with 26, Gordon 16. The Nuggets end up 51.3% for the field. Bam led the Heat. This is with Bam doing well, by the way. 26-12. And Miami with an NBA record low two free throw attempts in this entire game. But I really feel like this is a reflection of what's to come. As much as I've been on the Heat Magic carpet ride, like, this is their kryptonite. I think Heat runs are more likely to get batted back by the Denver Nuggets. We saw that last night. And I just feel like the Heat ultimately have to be perfect here. And the Nuggets can just do what they do, largely unchecked. We'll see. Game two, Sunday night, the spread once again, 8.5 points. Tennis talk, French Open next. Numbers game, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
The Sports Betting Network.
It's time to download Nevada's premier sports betting app, BetMGM Sports. BetMGM with all your favorite wagering options, along with in-game betting, boosted odds specials, and much more. Download the BetMGM app today. Won't take you but a few seconds, then stop by any MGM casino on the Strip. With your state-issued ID to open an account, start placing sports bets from anywhere in Nevada. Whatever your sport, whatever your betting style, you're going to love BetMGM's state-of-the-art technology and fan-friendly specials every day of the week. Visit BetMGM for terms and conditions. Must be 21 or older and physically located in Nevada. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-522-4700. Before we get to tennis, more on game one, because I slipped this in, and I do think it's worth lingering on a bit, which is the Aaron Gordon thing, where every single time he had someone like Martin, or in the rare occurrence it was Vincent, on him, the Nuggets immediately recognized the mismatch and do that. Now that's basketball 101. But on the heels, and the Heat obviously wanted to have Jimmy Butler on him, but they would get switched up in transition a lot. On the heels of a day here on this show where perhaps the most simple but direct analysis was the Nuggets are just taller than them, which was just great because the visual on it is just, yeah, you're actually right.
Like, it hilariously played out.
It's hilariously played out immediately in that game. So that, I mean, I don't know what the real solution is to that. There's too many bodies.
We JVT and I spoke about this for a fair amount of Hardwood Handicappers yesterday. I was intrigued to see if the Heat rolled with the same starting lineup as they did with Boston, because Caleb Martin in that starting lineup, it makes a lot of sense. Obviously, he was playing great, and though you can play him in that spot against a team like Boston, I just don't know. I don't think Caleb Martin's going to be the guy who ends up losing severe minutes, Gil. But Kevin Love's going to have to play in this series. Like, there is just the size differential. Was overwhelming last night, right? And there were the reports post-game that was Denver. When Denver saw what the Heat starting lineup was, they went right to that game plan that they had already had in their back pocket of Aaron Gordon's going to end up on a small defender, and we're attacking the rim with him.
And this for those who are like, wait, don't they always have the size disadvantage? Yeah, but like the Celtics, just think about the Celtics. There's Horford, who tends to play from outside anyway. And then there's Robert Williams, or as Kevin Harlan really wanted to drive home, Rob Williams. Did you get that series, by the way? He really wanted to drive home the Rob Williams thing. That's really it. What you have here is, besides Jokic and Gordon, you have guys like Michael Porter Jr., who I believe are actually taller than Bam.
Yep.
Which is hard to, like, you know, reconcile in your brain, but that's the size that they have on this team.
Well, it's every position.
Every position.
I mean, even Jamal Murray, right? That's a big point guard.
KCP's
a longer. Yes. Yeah, he's a longer play. It's every position. So I think that's going to be interesting going into game two. I do think there are some. Like, I tried to do it on the pod yesterday, but it's the Caleb Martin stuff. He was awesome last series. You just have to keep in mind as series change, matchups change, everything changes. I think there's opportunities for unders on him and probably Duncan Robinson going forward, because I think he's the guy who might end up losing more minutes, Gil. I think Caleb Martin's still going to belong in that rotation. Duncan Robinson, especially if it plays out like last night, if you're not making your threes, you're really quickly going to be on the bench because you're a liability defensively.
You also, before we get to the test, I remember one of our texts last night, you were like, you didn't understand the rolling off Bam thing?
Yeah. Well, it was, once I kind of watched some of it back, I liked it because what they were doing was taking away almost everything else.
That's exactly what
I didn't like at first, though. Was we saw how much he was struggling in game five, game six, game seven of that Boston series. So I'm like, why would you let a star who's been struggling get easy buckets to feel confident and heat up? But
he was the only one that could do anything.
He was the only one. And Jimmy Butler, this is something that I know people have been bringing up. Is there injury concern still with this ankle? I thought there was last series. Last night, this was his 18% usage rate last night for him, Gil, the lowest in the playoffs so far. He only had 8 drives to the basket last night. That has to be a concern if you're a Heat fan, Heat backer at all. If Jimmy Butler's not getting to the basket, they're not getting to the free throw line, you have to be basically perfect from three to win this series.
They got to be perfect. Their margin of error is very slim in this matchup, for sure.
But
yes.
It's been about 10 months, Gil. I'm back on the Heat bandwagon. Yeah, let's go, South Florida.
By the way, we should mention this. So Kelly Bidlin, if you're just a numbers game listener, you probably think like Kelly Bidlin is anti-Heat. Kelly was known for backing the Heat at all, like every possible opportunity he had before you came on this show. So you will have to return.
Ticket, yeah. Big ticket for them when they went into the bubble. That was 75-1 on them. They were the bubble.
Adjusted series price on the Heat. 5-1. Interest?
No.
No, I don't know. I don't either. I legitimately have no interest.
I did make some game two bets, though. They are all Michael Porter Jr. related. I played over his points and rebounds at 24.5, and I played over his threes again. Yeah, if he's going to keep getting 11 attempts, I'm going to keep playing it.
Yeah, I'm feeling like when the series is in Denver, I'm feeling like Nuggets first half ATS is the play.
I agree. I haven't done anything with side yet for game two. I don't know how much I'll do with side rest of the series, Gil. This total's intriguing, though, to me, because that ended up, like, we basically the same total for game two as game one, but man, did that thing sail under.
It looked like it was going to soar over when you were watching the first half, as we said. So, yeah, that could be meaning you think that the under will still manifest?
I'm going to be keeping my eye on it for more game three, game four, because possessions were a little lighter than I expected. But I think there's a lot of that. You got to ask yourself, how much is that coming off of that game seven, right, shorter rest? Denver all this time to make plans. I think you will see this game more in transition as we go forward.
All right, French Open, Roland Garros, tennis's second major of the year, the clay court. Major, the clay court slam. The headline is really that at the top of the men's and the women's, you still have Djokovic and Alcaraz on the men's side. You still have Swiatek, Rybakina, and Sabalenka on the women's side. Everything below that is carnage. And yesterday, Jannik Sinner, who was the biggest, I had so many texts from people who had Jannik Sinner tickets yesterday, who are just devastated because he was the biggest beneficiary in theory when Daniil Medvedev got ousted. Sinner on that side of the bracket. And then Sinner gets beat right after we got off air yesterday by Daniel Altmaier. And so really Holger Rune, which you see now reflected in the French Open men's side market, Holger Rune becomes the next man up, if you will, on that side of the bracket. That's why he's plus 650 in the number three hole now.
Is Rune and Zverev both in that quarter?
I
saw both their odds get shortened.
Yeah, well, that would make sense. Yeah, if Zverev's, yeah. I'm looking at Zverev's in there too. That would make sense.
You haven't been high on Zverev recently, right?
No, I mean, he got hurt a year ago in this very tournament. He's not peak Zverev. Do I think that he can beat Alcaraz or Djokovic? He could, but he's not going to do it often. So there was no bets that I've made on him. But Rune becomes the guy sort of on that side now at plus 650. Zverev will absolutely have something to say about that. But so will Casper Ruud, right, at 18-1, who, you know, wasn't in best form before this tournament. But it's still Alcaraz and Djokovic. They just happen to be on the same side of the bracket. Joker having himself, well, it's 5-5 first set against Davidovich Fokina. As far as picks that I have remaining, so Peyton Stearns was a big loser this morning. I had Peyton Stearns against Kasatkina, thinking her price was good. It wasn't good at all. As it turns out, she got rolled. And I have Offner right now going up against Fognini, who's also a slight dog. That's in set number two, where Offner is up a break, but he lost the first set. What I have left, I want to see if there's one or two of mine left. I still have, if Sloane Stephens has not started, I have her giving 3.5 games to Yulia Putintseva. I have Sloane Stephens, who I talked about before the tournament as a great 35-1 number in that quarter. She's minus, I got her minus 3.5 against Yulia Putintseva. That's still to come. I hope that hasn't started yet. If it is, it's about to.
Looks like it just started. See Sloane Stephens live minus 180.
Yeah, that was kind of a pre-flop number.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, they literally, a game has not been completed yet.
Okay. Well, if you want to jump in live, there you go. And then the only other one on the men's side, or the only one in period today that I have left, Juan Pablo Varillas, I have as north of a $2 dog against Hubert Urquaz, who I believe is not in, really has been working hard his last two matches, both against David Goffin and against Talon Griekspoor in rounds one or two. We're both five setters. And in the case of his match against Griekspoor, a couple of those sets were 15-13 in a tiebreaker and 7-5 in a tiebreaker. So fatigue, especially in a third round, is not everything. But generally speaking, when you look at their numbers, Juan Pablo Varillas shouldn't be anywhere close to north of a $2 dog against Hubert Urquaz, who's obviously a much higher-ranked world player than is Varillas. But on clay here, this represents value to me. So those are the two right now. Sloane Stephens just started minus 3.5 against Yulia Putintseva. And then a little later on, Juan Pablo Varillas against Hubert Urquaz. That's V-A-R-I-L-L-A-S, Kelly, in case you were scoring at home.
Do you remember what Novak was before the match today? He just got broken.
Did he? Yeah. Down 6-5?
Yeah, down 6-5.
Well, Davidovich Fokina, now here's the deal. Davidovich Fokina is a tough, tough player. Now, is it enough to make you want to bet on him against Djokovic? I mean, no, you're going in with your Evel Knievel helmet on. I mean, that would take some courage.
Yeah, I'm thinking about betting Djokovic live is what it was bringing up.
Yeah, don't. Here's the thing.
You,
I mean,
you
that's
need
still
be a caution on that.
It's a sound bet. I would never tell you not to do that. But Davidovich Fokina is for reals.
Okay.
Yeah, he could surprise. And for those of us who have Alcaraz bets, I'm firmly in the camp of rooting for that this morning. We'll come back. Jonathan Von Tobel, JVT on the NBA Finals next. Numbers Game, Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
A Numbers Game on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Take your sports betting game to the next level this summer with a VSiN Pro subscription. Sign up now for only $9.99 to get access to everything we do, including daily pro picks and all the summer action, including NFL and college football futures, premium analysis from our team of top handicappers and industry experts, 24/7 video access, and Pro Tools, Kelly. Like our exclusive betting split showing you where the public and sharp money is going to give you an edge. Start betting smarter. Visit VSiN.com/subscribe and sign up now. I got to do the pause thing. Pro Tools, like.
Stop being immature, Gil. Come on.
Sorry. I'm a child.
You're a child. Come on. Grow up.
By
Take
the way,
this serious.
Kelly and I were talking off air because that's what Kelly and I do. And besides the Hamilton sing-along that we had just moments ago, we were talking about how Shaq admitted this was the first time he saw Jokic in person.
Yeah. It was an interesting post-game interaction.
And did you see the Kendrick Perkins thing where they finally asked him, is Jokic the best player in the world? Remember, Kendrick Perkins, who some might argue started the, how can I put this, movement against Jokic getting the MVP. Perk goes, yeah, I guess you got to say that he is now. You think Embiid could mail him the MVP trophy?
Yeah.
Jokic, you think he could do that?
I don't think that's going to happen.
No? Okay. We get tweets at Beanie the Book. This is from Rick Ollier. I'm glad the NBA started game one on Thursday instead of Friday, and I know Kelly is too. It would have been tough for Kelly to manage watching basketball and Friday night SmackDown at the same time. Jason Stark pointing out, as we were talking about how Jokic just got his triple-double, he said he had 9 boards at the end of the third. Didn't get the 10th until 1:40 was left.
Yeah, there were some interesting player prop sweats last night. Wait, you know, I was just telling you off air, Matt Brown was in a legalized sports betting state. You
yes.
know what I mean?
So a legalized one. Yes.
Right.
Yes. If only we could live in one of those.
And he was texting me some of the same game parlays he made, and I'm like, well, this is looking good, assuming Jokic gets that 10th rebound at any point.
Sean, Gil, ponder this. The Nuggets won by 11 with no player going off, and Porter was 2 of 11 from 3. Game 2 going to be a landslide, he says.
I mean, end of that game, he'd end up with a higher three-point percentage than the Denver Nuggets.
Let's bring in our senior NBA analyst, Jonathan Von Tobel, everybody. Also the host of Hardwood Handicappers, which he does with our own Kelly Bidlin, multiple times a week. Good morning to you, JVT. How you doing, man?
Speaking of professional tools, right? You guys now have me.
There we go.
He's in on the joke. Pro tools.
I think everybody is, yes.
I'm going to do a Murder, She Wrote thing on that, JVT. All right, so was your impression generally that of Game 1, sort of, which was we were sort of talking about in the first segment, which is, at least this was my opinion, which is, as much as I've been on the Heat Magic carpet ride, I have felt that the Nuggets are their kryptonite. And I felt like last night, both in terms of matchups, both in terms of the way that Heat flurries were met by the Nuggets, that at least for one game, it reflected that very thing.
Yeah, I think so. So let's take it back. I think you should probably look at it like the lowest moment for the Nuggets, right? Which is that fourth quarter where the Heat come back into this thing. They're playing their zone because at the beginning of the game, they were playing the zone, but in the possessions where Jokic wasn't out there. Then at the end of the game, they start rolling out the 2-3 zone with Jokic out there. Things start to slow down a little bit. They get back to, I think, what was it? 7 was the lowest that they cut the deficit in the fourth quarter, Miami.
9.
So what does Thank you. But what does Denver do? Take a deep breath, slow down, and they just start moving the ball around. They start doing exactly what you're supposed to do against the zone. They get it to Jokic in the middle. They start kicking it back out to guys. There's movement. You get shots at the rim, everything. They just look really calm and cool and put together, Gil. And like you mentioned, almost every little thing that the Miami Heat were trying to do against them, they had a rebuttal. They had an answer for it that allowed them to stay at the very least at arm's length over Miami that entire game. And if you want to make the argument that Miami was missing open shots, I would very much argue that Michael Porter Jr. in 2 of 11 from 3-point range was also missing open shots, as well as some of the other pieces for the Denver Nuggets. So I would agree with you. I think, you know, Kelly and I were laughing when we were doing the podcast the other day, because it's like you want to point in positive directions for both teams, but the Nuggets just have many advantages in this series. To you, to use your term, they are the kryptonite for the Miami Heat, whether it's their size, whether it's their shooting, whether it's Jokic. And I think that's just going to be kind of a wall that this Heat team runs into throughout the course of the series.
And I guess you may have answered this, but just moving it forward, I guess, so for those, again, we always in the last series were like, well, it's Spoelstra versus Mazzulla, right? Spoelstra versus Mazzulla. Yep. By the way, Joe Mazzulla is getting a second year per Brad Stevens with the Celtics. That came out yesterday as well. This just feels like, as great as a coach Spoelstra is, that any adjustment is sort of just a hope and a prayer. Do you agree with that as well?
Yeah, I think so. And I also think it speaks to, this is one of the points that I've been trying to make a lot whenever I talk about this or we talk about the podcast. Michael Malone is a very good coach. He knows what he's doing. He knows this personnel. He's been with them for a really long time. And we'll go to one stat that I think kind of shows that Michael Malone knows what he's doing here. You know, the Miami Heat throughout the regular season, Kelly's brought this up, they're one of the best teams at deterring teams from getting to within 4 feet of the basket. They don't give up shots at the rim. When you get there, you can have a high rate of success. Usually it's on broken plays, but they don't give up shots within 4 feet. Yesterday, the Nuggets had 20 shots within 4 feet and drew 8 shooting fouls. Like, this team was awesome. And it was a lot with the back cuts and the adjustments of what they were doing against the 2-3 zone. And Michael Malone has a lot to do with that. So your point about like the adjustments and kind of a hope and a prayer and trying to find something with the roster that's a little undermanned, I think it's also Michael Malone just pushing the right buttons and knowing exactly what to do in different scenarios. And I think he deserves a ton of credit for not only this run, but what happened last night. They had answers for almost everything.
Yeah, I mean, if Haywood Highsmith from Wheeling Division II, right, is sort of one of your answers, and by the way, good on him. He's awesome for where he's gotten, and good on the Heat for using players like that. But at some point, that may run its that may meet its wall, if you will. Where do you stand on the total? Because I think the total was an interesting thing last night. About a quarter and a half in, it looked like this thing was going to soar over. Then it just kind of grinded to the point where it wasn't even going to get close to it a little later on. Which of those to you feels like it will be the norm? Or can you even say that?
I don't know if you can say it right, because in that first game too is so weird for Miami, because they play that game seven, then they go into that situation. They're playing in altitude for the first time in a long time. And I think you kind of saw that in the second half. They wanted to slow it down. They play that zone a little bit more, as you mentioned. So that mucks up the whole thing, and it really slows down the tempo. But I would posit that if you look at Miami, and now again, we get 2 days in between, right? So if you're Miami, you get 2 days to activate your lungs, get used to everything, work out, get used to playing in altitude. I would not be surprised. And I was looking at some of the numbers, you know, Miami, for example, last night, guys, their offense, their transition rate off of live rebounds was only 9.4%. That's insanely low. That's in the second percentile. So like, that's going to be something that I think ramps up as we move along in the series and maybe even game two. You know, one of the biggest weaknesses for Denver is their transition defense off of live rebounds. And I think once Miami kind of gets used to that, Gil, you'll start to see that a little bit more. So maybe by the time we get to game two, we see more push from Miami off of live rebounds and they have a little bit more success, and that speeds up the pace. You only had 91 possessions in the game yesterday. I think that's maybe something that changes. So to the total, where we're down like, what, 4.5 points from where we were yesterday. Mm-hmm. I think that is something that might be worth looking at. Because if we talk about increased pace for Miami, which I think is going to be there, better shot making from both teams. Max Strus missed a bunch of wide open threes, as we know. Same with Michael Porter Jr. Just better overall shot making, much like we saw in that first half. Then I think that lends itself to playing this thing over. So we'll see where the market goes. But I wouldn't be surprised if it starts to creep back up by the time we get to game time.
Tyler Herro was supposed to come back in game three, we heard initially. Now we're hearing it could be as early as game two. Will he make enough of a difference for the Heat?
I don't think so, because I think what he offers offensively, he also takes away on defense. So now if you have him out there on the floor, do you have another shot maker? Yes. You have another guy who can create his own shot, who can hit bailout shots, who's a catch and shoot threat. Does a lot of good stuff on offense. You don't want to take that away. However, now you have another target for the Denver Nuggets to go after, whether it's Jamal Murray, whether it's Nikola Jokic, or that two-man pick and roll and getting him involved in most of those. That's going to be something that the Nuggets look for almost every single time down the floor. And if you have him out there with like a Max Strus, like then all of a sudden you're looking at it and there's two guys for the Denver Nuggets to really target. So I would argue, and it, you know, it lends itself to, if he comes back in game two, again, to our angle on the total here, maybe going over, it's that I think he kind of is a wash because of what he offers on offense, but also what he takes away on defense. And you might just have a little bit more scoring in the game overall, but not an overall massive positive impact, because I do think he's a relatively weak defender that they can get after.
Yeah, it just feels to me like even if the Heat were to figure out a way to win game two, John, like, yeah, I just feel like I would still have all the confidence in the world in the Nuggets. Ultimately, how long do you think this series goes in your heart of hearts?
In my heart of hearts, I'd say five. I think that when you're looking at every advantage, and I'll also point to this yesterday, you know, Jimmy Butler, he had 13 points. He was 6 of 14 from the floor, especially down the stretch, guys. I don't know if you saw this too. He's like, he's passing up open looks. Yeah. He's not really getting overly aggressive. I've told this to Kelly. I don't think he's 100% healthy. And I think that has lent itself to what we have seen with him down the stretch of this postseason, shooting 42% since the ankle injury going into yesterday. So all of that put together, in my heart of hearts, I would say that I think this is a close series. I think the Nuggets just check almost every single box. And the one that they do check, the Heat, Eric Spoelstra, I just don't think the edge is as big as it was in past series.
So that's an interesting thing to me, because it's as recently as game six of the series against the Celtics, where we could have said the same thing about Butler, right? Until that final flourish, where he sort of put them on their back, to use the cliche, and made it, you know, a game where the Heat almost won it, right? They were 3 seconds away from winning it. He was so passive. Talk about Jimmy Butler. He just passed up all kinds of opportunities. And the Celtics were flawed enough that then he could show up finally, you know, in game seven, or in that flurry at the end of game six where it was enough for the Heat to get over. That doesn't appear to be the case here.
No, and I'd argue really quickly, because I know we're up against it. Like, Al Horford had a very big hand in allowing Jimmy Butler to have that flurry. He was abysmal in two of the final possessions against Butler defensively.
Yeah. I hope Heat fans who are listening for the first time are like, this guy hates the Heat. Nah, man, I was all over you guys for three series. But
I wasn't. I'll be fair.
JVT, one of our most respected pro tools, and I mean that in the greatest way possible. Thank you, JVT. At me, JVT, our senior NBA analyst. And, of course, the host of Hardwood Handicappers, which he does with our own Kelly Bidlin, does a fantastic job. We'll come back. Hockey with Jake Hahn. The Stanley Cup playoffs are here. That's next.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Numbers game proudly brought to you by BetMGM. at BetMGM, an official sports betting partner of the NHL, lacing up with a playoff parlay insurance offer. Place the same game parlay of four legs or more and get back a bonus bet up to $25 if you miss one leg. Enjoy the playoffs like never before with BetMGM's daily promotion, boosted odds specials, and parlay selection features throughout the postseason. Log in now or sign up and opt in to get back up to $25 in bonus bets if one leg in your same game parlay falls short. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly and offer resources to help you make appropriate choices. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. 21 and over. New customer offer. All promotions subject to qualification and eligibility requirements. Rewards issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets. Bonus bets expire 7 days from issuance. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Promotional offer not available in Mississippi, Nevada, and New York. Skill Alexander. We get tweets at Beating the Book. Mike Stacks, with more entries in Survivor and Millions over at Circa, what do you think is the perfect number for each? I like 3 and 3. Can I offer you a Survivor entry for your sushi place?
Ooh.
I'm getting a $1,000 offer.
I was going to say, we have official dollar amount offer on it.
I'm sorry. I'm not able to accept offers such as that.
Oh, my gosh. We're going to start playing that game. What about $1,500?
Let's not play that game. Let's not play this game. JC. This is a very fair point from JC about the Nuggets and the Heat. Because I don't want it to all be one way slanted. JC points out, he goes, the Heat by margin had more shots than the Nuggets. So for me, he says, that's what I'm asking myself. Could the Heat have won that game with that margin? What he's referring to is the Heat ended up putting up 96 shots to the Nuggets 79. They actually had a 2-rebound disadvantage, but five more offensive boards.
But only two. Right, like we're
only
sitting
two,
here talking
but
about
only
the,
two.
Yeah, we're
that's
sitting
correct.
Here talking about the size advantage yeah. the whole time for Denver. Only two.
So I do think that is a fair point. Anytime you're putting up 17 more shots, shouldn't that play out? Shouldn't that manifest? Right. You know what that is? It's a numbers game, is what that is, Kelly.
Ding 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 ding.
See what I just did there?
Yeah.
So I mean, that is that's a point. That's a point worth making. So let's not say there wasn't any silver lining in this for the Heat. But obviously, got to make more buckets. This baloncesto, it's a very simple game, Kelly. That ball's got to go through the cylinder. Let's talk hockey, because the Stanley Cup playoffs begins tomorrow night right here in Vegas. Literally in my backyard, Kelly, at T-Mobile, where you can hear the horn when the Knights score roughly about 4 or 5 seconds before it shows up on your TV. Jake Hahn joins us. We always love hearing from Jake, co-host of The Point, the fantasy hockey show on SiriusXM NHL. You can follow him on Twitter at jhahn4. That's the number 4. How you doing, Jake?
Doing great. Happy Friday, Gil, Kelly. Gil, very impressed how you were able to slip in the name of the show just seamlessly there. That's a true professional. I strive to get to that level at some point. That was very impressive.
Jake, I'm a wildly talented individual. It's amazing what I just did there.
Extremely.
I knew that already.
The Golden Knights in game one are -135. Now, depending on where you shop, they are right around there, let's say, for the series. Game one tomorrow night. But I want to start with the Panthers. Because the Panthers obviously fall into the narrative of hot goaltender, right? Sergei Bobrovsky is the guy. And so in hockey, many a team has won a Stanley Cup based on that as sort of the topic sends. As long as you have that, the rest will fall into place. And it's not just some, you know, just sort of thing that comes out of a fortune cookie. It's really true, because obviously then you can afford mistakes. Your goaltender can bat away stuff. But the Panthers, at each point, let's just talk about the postseason. At each point in the postseason, right? Boston, Toronto, Carolina, they knocked them all down. And you just wonder at this point, is there anybody, any team, that they can't vanquish at this point? What is your thoughts on them generally?
Well, and that's what I've been kind of wrestling with all week here, Gil. And kind of what I've really been wrestling with Florida for the entire postseason, if I'm being completely honest, because they were obviously significant underdogs against Boston. They found a way to come back in that series, down 3-1, ultimately win it in 7. They were underdogs in round 2 against the Maple Leafs. I thought at times the Leafs looked like the better team in a lot of those games, but yet Florida was still able to dispose of them in 5 games. Then you get to Carolina. Again, Florida's the underdog, and at times it looked like Carolina was the better team at courses throughout that series, but yet it was still a sweep, and Florida won all 4 games. So I think that speaks to what you said about Bobrovsky and sort of that frustration from other teams. And I think Vegas might have a bit of that wake-up call in the first couple of games to go, okay, we feel like we're playing better than they are, but it's a one-goal game, and it gets a little nervy in the third period, and Florida's shown that they're perfectly comfortable playing one-goal games. 13 games in a row now, guys, going back to the series against the Boston Bruins. where Florida's been involved in a one goal game in the third period. So every game they've played since that Boston series, since about game four, game five of that series, has been a one goal game in the third period. So they're perfectly comfortable just keeping it close. They'll make some mistakes, but they feel like Bobrovsky's there. And I think the other question mark with Florida is how is the elongated rest going to affect them, right? We have this on postseason time, whether it's NBA, NHL, you always see a team that goes through very early, gets a lot of rest, a lot more rest than the other team. That's the conversation here with Florida. Maybe it affects them in game one, guys, but I think as the series goes on, they'll get back into it. Might have to be a little bit of a reset factor. So maybe a sloppy first period from them, maybe a sloppy first couple periods for them tomorrow night, but I don't think it'll take them too long to get re-engaged in this series.
So interesting. So you think rust may trump rest, in other words, in this case?
Yeah, like I think you want to find that perfect balance. You obviously want rest at this time of the year. You just played three rounds of playoff hockey, even though their last couple rounds were short, right? Five against Toronto, four against Carolina. So it only took them nine games to make it through two really good teams in the second and third round. So you could argue, did they really need that much rest? They don't have too many players that are banged up. I mean, this time of the year, there's always guys that are nursing injuries that you don't really know about or the media is not talking about. So I think you'll take like 3 to 4 days in between series is kind of that perfect number of, okay, we can rest the body, but we're not going to lose a lot of that momentum. And, you know, basically a week and a half off since they played last, I think is way too much. And I do think there's going to be a bit of a reset factor. But look, this is the cup final, guys. They know what they're playing for. I don't think it'll take them too long. A couple hits maybe in the first period, and all of a sudden they'll be back to where they were before.
Is it your sense that if Florida ends up winning this, that it's going to be Bobrovsky or Tkachuk?
Yeah.
For Conn Smythe.
Yeah, it's basically down to two people. I think the Vegas conversation is fascinating for Conn Smythe, but yeah, when it comes to Florida, we've been debating in our show. I mean, we had a lot of time this week, guys, doing hockey shows every day when there's no games. So we're trying to debate basically everything. There's only two options on Florida. I would shout out Brandon Montour as a guy that's been really good in this playoff run on the back end, but I don't think he's got a shot to win the Conn Smythe trophy. And it sort of comes down to how you view hockey and you know, how valuable you feel like that goaltending position is. My vote would go to Bobrovsky right now, but a lot of this is recency bias. So if Tkachuk has a couple of huge games in the cup final to lead Florida to the win, people might vote for him. But I feel like Bobrovsky is the reason why they're here, and I think he deserves to be the favorite, at least going into this series.
Well, let's talk about the Vegas Golden Knights, both from a Conn Smythe standpoint, but just generally. I mean, Jake Eichel, and Mark Stone, Marchessault, Carlson being two of the original six Vegas Golden Knights that are still here, even from year number one. I mean, they're all such accomplished players. In the end, this season obviously hasn't been as big a case in the postseason, but this season, goaltending has been their issue. Let's just start with, do you believe that what we see in game one is likely to be what we see throughout, or do you think every game's its own sort of thing in a vacuum?
Yeah, I think it's closer to what you said at the end there. I feel like each game is going to tell a bit of a different story. I'm not going to personally read too much into game one just because of some of the factors that I talked about, especially with Florida coming off this long layoff. And, you know, Vegas is working off a bit of a layoff as well, not nearly as long as Florida. So maybe we don't see each team's best in game one, although it is the cup final, and I don't think it'll take very long for these teams to get engaged and really get into it. But I'm not going to read too much into it. Like, if Vegas comes out and routes Florida in game one, for example, and nobody's really been routing Florida, but if Florida shows that, you know, the long layoff affected them, and maybe Bobrovsky finally has a tough game and Vegas wins 4-1 or 5-1, something like that, I'm not going to freak out and say, oh, a series is over and Florida has no shot of getting back into this thing. Doubting this team has not been a good idea throughout the course of these playoffs. So not going to read too much into game one here, guys, just because of the long layoff.
Yeah. And by the way, it should be noted that the first time the Vegas Golden Knights were in the Stanley Cup Finals, they did win game one. Everybody here was going crazy. And then the Caps proceeded to score 20 goals in a gentleman's sweep. So, yeah, things can turn for sure. So in the end, is there a bet on game one? Is there a bet on the series?
There's no bet on the series for me just yet, but there is going to be a bet on game one, and I'm going to take the Vegas Golden Knights here, guys. You talked about them getting off to that great start in the cup final last time, and then obviously it didn't go their way. I think Alex Ovechkin's still partying with the Stanley Cup somewhere after that Washington Capitals win and the four in a row in the cup final. I like Vegas. I like them in this spot. I think it's Saturday night. The crowd's going to be pumped up. I guess it'll be closer to an afternoon game there, but close tonight, and time doesn't really matter actually in Vegas anyways, right? So everybody will be ready to go. It'll be a Saturday. You can shop around. I think you find a minus 130 out there, which is a pretty fair price. I feel like the long layoff for Florida is going to be difficult. And I think Vegas got the perfect amount of rest where it's just a few days off. They still carry some of that momentum from game six where they played great against the Dallas Stars. If they play anything like they did in game six against Dallas, I think this game is there. So I'll be going Vegas in game one, guys.
All right. Jake's on the Golden Knights. Jake, enjoy game one. Good luck with the bet. We'll talk to you next week.
Yeah, you guys have yourself a great weekend. We'll talk to you then.
My man, Jake Hahn, everybody. Again, SiriusXM NHL, co-host of The Point and the Fantasy Hockey Show on SiriusXM. Vegas Golden Knights, can they do it in year number six? Bobrovsky and the Panthers will have something to say about that. We'll talk college baseball next with Ben Wilson.